This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Des Moines. Boehner blinks, Nelson bows out in Nebraska, and Newt to Paul, no more Mr. Nice Guy. It's Wednesday and time for a
systemic avoidance of reality
edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
Oops.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. This week, we're both in the studios of Iowa Public Radio in amazingly snowless Des Moines, with the caucuses now less than 1 week away. As polls show Ron Paul up and Newt Gingrich down, the former speaker repeals his no negativity pledge. Rick Santorum, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, even Mitt Romney all jump on the Iowa bus. House Republicans give in on the payroll tax extension. DOJ says no way to the South Carolina's voter ID law. And redistricting makes Republicans angry in Maryland, happy in Jersey. Nobody's happy in Arizona. We'll focus on the caucuses here in Iowa for much of this hour. But first, we begin, as we always do, with a trivia question. Ken.
Hi, Neil. And that Howard Dean scream happened in Iowa.
It did,
in 2004. Okay, the trivia question is, who was the last person to win the Iowa caucuses and lose the New Hampshire primary in the same year twice?
If you think you know the answer to this week's trivia question, the last person to win the Iowa caucuses and lose the New Hampshire primary in the same year twice, give us a call, 800-989-8255. No email this week because of the difficulties here in the foreign studio here in Iowa, but they can do it. We just can't. If you think you know the answer, 800-989-8255. In the meantime, we're going to be focusing on Iowa, but we have to go right next door to begin with. Ben Nelson of Cornhusker Kickback fame calls it quits.
Yes, the Democrat will not seek a third term. Now, there are some Democrats who say that he's a nominal Democrat, that he often did not vote with his party, and that's true. But the removal of Nelson from a third term bid certainly opens up the Senate race, the Senate seat for the Republican Party. There seems to be no Democrat out there who looks likely to fill the shoes. They're talking about Bob Kerry. But the last I saw, Bob Kerry was at the New School University in New York City. I don't think that's a good resume to run for the Senate in Nebraska. So anyway, the Republicans are battling each other in a tough primary. But obviously, right now, that seat looks like it's leaning Republican at the minimum. Dave Heineman, who's the governor there, Republicans would love for him to run and clear out the rest of the Republican field.
And makes it even harder for Democrats to hold on to their majority in the Senate.
It was tough anyway. I mean, of the 33 Senate seats up next year, 23 are Democratic held. So, they had the numbers against them anyway. But this would have been a tough seat to hold for the Democrats either way.
A week ago, we were on the countdown clock yet again, this time on the payroll tax cut extension, as the Senate had approved a two-month extension and gone home. The House of Representatives refused to do it. And Speaker of the House, John Boehner, was getting withering criticism on this from, among others, the President of the United States.
This is an issue where an overwhelming number of people in both parties agree. How can we not get that done? I mean, has this place become so dysfunctional that even when people agree to things, we can't do it? It doesn't make any sense.
Neil, you got a nice applause there.
Right, I was, but from the president, no less. But in any case, the withering criticism that counted for John Boehner was not so much the president. He can get by with that.
That's exactly the point. It's the Wall Street Journal. It's conservative and Republicans around the country. And also it showed clearly that Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republican conference had no faith in the House Republicans. Why give President Obama and the Democrats a huge victory? And they did by standing against the extension for 2 months. They kept saying it was a Band-Aid to oppose the extension for 2 months of the payroll tax and then knuckle down and basically succumb to President Obama's argument. It was a big victory for the Democratic Party and a loss for the Republicans.
And this is the way John Boehner finally admitted that it was all over.
May not have been politically the smartest thing in the world, but I'm going to tell you what. I think our members waged a good fight.
wage the good fight. Well, I guess we can put our countdown clocks away for what? Oh, 7 weeks now.
Exactly. But here's the thing. The Republicans all along were seeing that President Obama would capitulate, would back down, would acquiesce for most of the year. And I suspect that they thought that same would happen this time. This time, Obama said he would not back down and refused to back down. And it was the Republicans who basically had to change its mind.
Just before we get on to the news here in Iowa, and there's plenty of that, redistricting three states now. I guess Arizona map is nearly finished. Two Tea Party freshmen are going to face a more difficult road. Also, maps look like they're being finalized in the states of Maryland, where a Republican is being squeezed, and in New Jersey, where two Democrats are going to be forced to run against each other.
Yeah, let's start in that reverse order. In New Jersey, which is going to lose one seat, Steve Rothman, who's from Bergen County, decided he's going to move and challenge another Democrat, a fellow Democrat, Bill Pascrell. The Democrats will lose. New Jersey will lose one seat, and it looks like they will lose one Democratic member because two Democrats will run against each other in the primary. In Maryland, it's the opposite. The Democrats control the whole process there, and Roscoe Bartlett, the long-serving, I think he's 80 years old, Republican, the new lines have put in a lot of more liberals, more minorities, Democrats into his mostly rural district, and Roscoe Bartlett could be in trouble as well. And in Arizona, two Republicans find themselves with less hospitable districts, including Ben Quayle, the son of Dan Quayle. And so those seats have been made much more competitive with this new redistricting scheme.
Let's see if we get some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question, and that is the last person to win the Iowa caucuses and lose the New Hampshire primary in the same year twice. 800-989-8255. No email this week. We're going to start with this is Bob. Bob with us from Rochester, Minnesota.
Yes, hi. This is Bob Sixta from Rochester, Minnesota. And I believe that the answer is Dick Gephardt.
Ken?
Well, Bob, I know you're a first-time caller. But Dick Gephardt, Dick Gephardt won the Iowa caucuses once in 1988, but he did not win it the second time he ran for president.
Nice call, Bob. Let's see if we go next to this is let's see if we can go to we're trying to go to well, let's see if we can go to Deborah. Deborah with us from Chanhassen in Minnesota.
Hi, I am not like Bob. I call all the time.
I think Bob's a first-time caller.
Yeah.
I know Bob's voice. He makes me goofy. hey, guys. Welcome to dreary Iowa, or Iowa. My guess is...
Did she say dreary?
Pardon?
George W. Bush.
George W. Bush, two-time president of the United States.
Well, actually, George W. Bush did lose the New Hampshire primary to Ronald Reagan in 1980, but he won it in 1988, so he did not lose New Hampshire twice.
Oh, nice try, though, Deborah. Appreciate that.
Bye.
Let's see if we go next to this is David. David with us from Charlotte.
Hi, good afternoon, guys, and happy holidays. I'm going to guess Bob Dole.
Bob Dole is the correct answer.
Ding, ding, ding.
He won the Iowa caucuses in 1988, but then lost shortly after to George H.W. Bush in New Hampshire. He also won the Iowa caucuses in 1996, lost New Hampshire to Pat Buchanan.
So hang on the line, David. We're going to take down your particulars, and we will mail you off a fabulous Political Junkie No Prize T-shirt in exchange for your promise of a digital picture of yourself that you can email us, and we'll put that on our wall of shame. Congratulations.
Great. I certainly appreciate it.
All right, David, I hit the right button even on this laptop computer. In the meantime, we have some developments here in Iowa, and that is Newt Gingrich just a couple of weeks ago seemed to be surging, seemed to be rushing to the lead. The latest polls show him withering under a blizzard of negative advertising from, among others, Ron Paul. Yesterday on CNN, Newt Gingrich was asked about the criticism he's getting from Ron Paul, who described him as a serial hypocrite.
I think Ron Paul's views are totally outside the mainstream of virtually every decent American.
And this in particular, hearkening back to some pamphlets that Ron Paul distributed 20 years ago or so when he was out of office, which contained some very insensitive language. Ron Paul, well, he says he hadn't been paying a lot of attention to him. He
dissented. Well, I kind of think what Newt Gingrich was talking about was Ron Paul's views on foreign policy and national security.
Specifically,
and things like that.
He mentioned those pamphlets.
Oh, okay. Well, there's also that issue as well when Ron Paul was out of Congress. I mean, he left Congress in 1984, ran for president as a libertarian in 88, came back in, I think, 96. In between that, he ran he under his name, the Ron Paul Political Newsletter, and a lot of anti-gay, anti-African-American, anti-Semitic statements were in this newsletter. Now, Ron Paul says, I never read it. I didn't write this. It's abhorrent to me. I repudiate it. But it went out under his name. This issue did come out in 2008 when Ron Paul ran for president last time, but obviously now as a potential front runner, and he may very well be the front runner. I'm speaking to a lot of people who think that Ron Paul, with his dedicated, you know, cadre of supporters, could win this thing the more somebody gets into the limelight, as we saw with Newt Gingrich, as we saw with Rick Perry and Herman Cain. Ron Paul, you know, his past is coming back to haunt him.
The other person who seems to be steady in the polls, as he has pretty much throughout this entire process, is Mitt Romney, who's first was under the radar here in Iowa, now running a lot of advertising. If he loses, it's not going to be able to say, I didn't pay a lot of attention. He spent over $1 million, him and his PAC, to run ads, including this one, which is now up on the air.
I'm going to get rid of Obamacare. It is a moral imperative for America to stop spending more money than we take in. It's killing jobs, and it's keeping our kids from having the bright prospects they deserve. The experience of balancing budgets is desperately needed in Washington, and I will take it there.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
And the old tactic of, in your own voice, attack the president, be presidential in your approach, but your PAC, the people who are supporting you also, they're the ones who run the negative ads attacking people like Newt Gingrich.
Right. Everybody's doing that. Rick Perry's doing that as well. When it's a Rick Perry ad, a Mitt Romney ad, a Ron Paul ad, it's very positive, very talking about the candidate in positive terms. When your PAC puts, your super PAC, they call it, when the Super Political Action Committee puts out these ads, it's viciously withering negative ads.
We should also mention Gary Johnson, former Republican candidate, now leaving the party. He has officially declared he's going to be running for the Libertarian nomination for President of the United States.
And there may be a challenge to him, too. Don't count out Ron Paul if he doesn't win the Republican nomination as a potential Libertarian candidate.
Or a third-party candidate. We'll have more about that and more on the situation here in Iowa. Less than a week to go before the caucuses. It is still anybody's ballgame. We'll be back in just a minute. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Political junkie Ken Rudin and I are in Des Moines today at the studios of Iowa Public Radio. The first votes of the 2012 nominating contest will be cast Tuesday night at 7 p.m. all across Iowa. Candidates like Representative Michelle Bachmann and former Senator Rick Santorum need to place well to keep their campaigns afloat. Others, like Texas Congressman Ron Paul, see the first voting contest in the nation as a catapult into the national spotlight a week before the first primary in the country. That, of course, in New Hampshire. We're going to be there next week. There are differences between caucuses and primaries. Within caucuses, there are differences in how Republicans pick their winners and how Democrats choose theirs. Of course, only the Republicans are caucusing this go-round. Barack Obama is going to face no opposition. So, Iowa Republicans, who's your first choice? Who's your second? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And joining us here in the studio at Iowa Public Radio, where she's a reporter, is Joyce Russell. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Hello, Neil.
And what happens on Tuesday night?
Well, neighborhood meetings happen. They're held in the evening in all 1,700-plus precincts. They're essentially organizational meetings for the party, but in presidential election years like this one, they include a vote for the presidential candidates. Now, in the case of Republicans, it's essentially a straw poll or a preference poll. Attendees express their preference for the Republican presidential candidates. Those results are reported to the media. But the results are not binding when it comes to selecting delegates to the county and then the state and then the national convention. So that's why you don't normally hear how many delegates to the national convention each candidate in Iowa won. There are 25 in all, by the way. Sometimes you'll see that in charts where people will break it down. Mm-hmm. Well, they got this many delegates, but that's just kind of a
speculative.
And the state party strongly urges that the delegates reflect the preference poll, but there's no obligation that they do so.
Joyce, we always talk about the Democrats, how they'll spend 5 hours debating ethanol and whether Neil Conan should still be host and talking about things like that. But the Republicans basically have their straw poll and they leave pretty soon. Is that
well,
correct?
A lot of them do that. But, you know, the real diehards will stay and debate the party platform. And then they do elect delegates to the next to the district convention.
And but, 4 years, I was just saying, 4 years ago, there were 120,000 Republicans who showed up at the caucuses, but they were on the defensive over George W. Bush and the war in Iraq. Now they seem to be on the ascendancy, or at least more energetic than they were certainly were 4 years ago.
Well, yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how that affects turnout at the caucuses. And the Democratic caucuses last time, there were huge lines. There was huge interest in Barack Obama. And because people can change their party affiliation at the caucus site, people plan, they have the list of how many registered Democrats or Republicans are eligible to vote at that caucus. But if huge numbers of independents or the opposite party come and change their party affiliation in order to participate, then you have huge crowds. Actually had traffic jams at the Democratic sites last time.
But is it one of the – you just cast a ballot, a paper ballot?
Well, it's not even a ballot. It's not, they don't give you a piece of paper with a slate of candidates. They give you a blank piece of paper, and you write the name of the candidate that you want. Now, ahead of that, people are able to stand up and make their case. So a well-organized candidate is going to have people at as many precinct caucuses as they can who will stand up and say, this is why you should vote for Mitt Romney, or this is why you should vote for so-and-so. But then they're handed a blank piece of paper, they write the name of the person on, and then they count those, and those are reported.
And so, but do they gather in groups around each candidate?
That's how the Democrats do it, and it's a much more complicated process. And that's when the way the Democrats do it, a second choice is much more relevant. So people gather in groups for their person that they want, and then they have to have a certain number or percentage in order to be viable. So if someone is then named not viable, then other people go after those people and try to get them to come to their group. Cokie Roberts once famously described the Iowa caucuses as like a Tupperware party, but she was talking about the Democrats and not the Republicans.
It's different. Ken?
Joyce, the caucuses start 7 p.m. Central Time, mm-hmm. 8 o'clock Eastern. When do you think we'll see results or get a sense of what's happening?
Well, because this is a Republican affair, it happens pretty quickly, actually. I was at a Republican caucus last time. And Mike, before that, they were even done there. They were declaring Mike Huck be the winner of the Republican. So within the hour, it seems like it usually happens.
And this is announced per district around the state?
Well, it's reported into a central location, and then those are all counted, and totals are what we end up with.
So almost as much as the Democratic caucuses, this would seem to reward people with good ground game, good organizations.
Absolutely. And there's some exception. There have been exceptions to that over the years. But in general, if you the more people that you have going to those caucus sites, standing up, so because people do turn out at the caucuses who are undecided, if you've got somebody there speaking for your man or your woman, you have an advantage. Now, last year was a very good example of where that didn't really hold true. Mitt Romney was very well organized. And then Mike Huckabee, you know, his thing really took fire with evangelicals behind him, and he was able to win. On the flip side of that, John McCain actually tied for third place in the Iowa caucuses last time, even though he had really no organization at all. The caucus that I went to, nobody even stood up and spoke for him, although I did see a man with a T-shirt that said Sportsman for McCain. So there were supporters out there.
So this is going to be fairly straightforward compared with the Democrats.
It is.
Should be over pretty quickly.
Yes, I would say within the hour.
And what does this insanely good weather, turnout should be pretty good.
I don't know that the weather really affects, you know, we're hardy here and, you know, people talk about the weather effect. But unless it's really just sleeting and driving sleet and snow, I don't think the weather really affects it that much.
Joyce Russell, thanks very much for your time. Joyce Russell, a reporter for Iowa Public Radio. She's with us here in the studios of Iowa, but we're actually in Hearst, studio. We'll put it that way. Also here with us is J.N. Seltzer. She's the president of Seltzer & Company, a public opinion and research firm based here in Des Moines. And nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation. Nice to meet you in person.
Well, it's always great to be with you.
6 days to go. Who's up?
I'm not going to even raise so much as an eyebrow to give you any indication that I know anything other than our most recent poll that we took in November.
In November. So we've seen other polls since then.
Yes.
And they're not your poll, which, of
they're
course,
not.
Is the gold standard. but lately, we're seeing that Mitt Romney seems to be holding steady, but Ron Paul seems to have taken the lead.
Well, we had in the three polls that we conducted show only Ron Paul getting consecutively better and better showing in every poll that we did. And he's the only one that didn't have a big surge. He's the only one that didn't get a lot of media scrutiny until about now. And we do know that his organization is strong in the state. So I think Ron Paul, it doesn't surprise me that some of those polls are showing him doing well.
There are other people who have spent a lot of time in this state, and you think, for example, of Rick Santorum.
Yes.
And Michelle Bachmann, of course, is from next door.
Yes. And Rick Santorum may be the lesson learned about organizing in Iowa, that putting in FaceTime and going to 99 counties and holding a lot of events may not be sufficient if you're not the right candidate with the right message.
Yet we're seeing that Rick Santorum seems to be picking up some endorsements, some pretty significant endorsements over the past couple of weeks.
Yes, and I think that's kind of the X factor, that do you kind of get this informal coalescing of people who are interested in those social issues coming together behind one candidate? I will say, though, that the mood in Iowa is very different than it was 4 years ago when Mike Huckabee won, and people have a tendency to refight the previous war. And there was a thought that as a social conservative, that's all you really needed in order to win Iowa. The mood is far more geared to thinking about the economy, jobs, tax reform. That's what's on the minds of likely Iowa Republican caucus goers.
Ken?
Two things. First of all, if you've last polled in November, by doing it once a month, you're going to do it, I guess, the next poll, the final poll will be next Sunday, correct, before the caucuses?
That's correct. You'll get a preview Saturday night.
You don't get a chance to see momentum then. I mean, if you're doing it November, then the end of December, it just seems like you miss out what's changing in Iowa.
Well, I think we see what's changing in Iowa during the final time that we're in the poll field, in the field with the poll. Yeah. We saw in 2004 Howard Dean go from a contender for the top spot down to fourth place just during the 4 days we were in the field with our final pre-caucus poll. So we will see the momentum. We will see the final momentum that matters in our poll.
It seems like more evangelical Christian candidates seem to do better in the poll. In other words, they're underrepresented in the polls than so-called moderates. In other words, if Mitt Romney is supposed to be among the leaders with Ron Paul and or whoever else, it seems like the more evangelical conservative candidate can do better than the polls indicate.
Well, if the evangelicals who are coming to caucus unite around one candidate, right now they're pretty fragmented in terms of their support, and that's what Mike Huckabee did not have. He did not have a contender for that portion of the Republican Party, and that's why he did well.
In fact, we're seeing some calls today by some evangelical Christian leaders in Iowa for a Santorum-Bachmann shotgun marriage, as some of them have described it, to unite their campaigns where one is strong, the other should give way, where the other is strong, the other should give way, in order to have one more coherent candidacy.
Well, Michelle Bachmann made a direct pitch saying, look, we have a weak president in terms of his overall standing with job approval. There's been no better time to get exactly what you want in a president, meaning strong on the social issues that you've been disappointed in previous Republican candidates. So now is the time to stand for purity. So she's been trying to be the one that they will come behind and think that they could win forward.
Okay.
Okay, so we have the polls coming out and the actual caucuses coming out on Tuesday. What do you see different than you have in 4 years ago? It seemed like 4 years ago, and I was just mentioning this to Joyce Russell before, that it seemed like the Republicans were on the defensive. They were more, you know, fretting about Bush and the war and the economy, things like that. They seem to be more energized this time?
Well, I think they're energized because they think they have a they believe they have a good shot to take the White House. They think they can hold on to the House of Representatives, and they think they can take the Senate. And that would be, you know, a very strong and powerful position for them to be in. But they need to win the White House in order for that to happen. So I think there's an energy thinking there's an opportunity here. It's relatively rare that you can unseat a sitting incumbent. They think this is their year.
How important are endorsements? Everybody talks about if only so-and-so would endorse so-and-so, that would change so-and-so's prospects. Are endorsements as big as you know, political junkies like to think they are?
Well, I don't think endorsements close the deal, but I do think they can open a door. That is, if someone that you respect, somebody that you admire, can give you an idea of why they support this person the way they do, or if a newspaper that's not known for a particular brand of politics endorses somebody unusual, it can open the door to questioning, taking a second look at a candidate that maybe you hadn't considered.
We want to hear from callers, Republicans in the state of Iowa. Who are you going to support come Tuesday, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Donna's on the line calling us from Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I think is that there's a fair chance that what's going to happen nationally is that none of these candidates are going to take enough votes in the primaries to win on the first vote at the convention. And if that happens, I believe there's a fair chance that Jeb Bush will get drafted. The Iowa caucuses are an ideal place for him to try, sort of put a feeler in the water, because it's a write-in vote, as the person was just explaining. So,
as Joyce Russell was telling us, goosebumps all over, political junkies everywhere, brokered convention. Ken Rudin, is this a possibility?
Let me think for a second. No. And the reason is, not, first of all, the last time the Republican convention went past a first ballot was 1948. The last time a Democratic one was 1952 for the presidential thing. The thing is, for the most part, you have a lot of winner-take-all states, and especially after the April primaries, when the primaries start in April, they're almost all winner-take-all. So, you know, unlike the Obama versus Clinton battle that lasted throughout June, I suspect that we're going to have a nominee sooner than you think. And, of course, if Mitt Romney wins in Iowa and wins in New Hampshire, and, of course, that's a big if, it could end even sooner than we think.
Don, thanks very much for the call. Of course, Pittsburgh, a eastern part of Iowa. You're listening to The Political Junkie here on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken Rudin, of course, is with us, along with Ann Seltzer, president of Seltzer & Company, a public opinion and research firm, polls for the Des Moines Register, and Bloomberg. She joins us here in the studios at Iowa Public Radio. Have you ever seen, before the caucuses, so many people undecided?
You know, there's a little bit of a myth of the Iowa undecided vote, and we're a little bit responsible for it, I think. When you ask who is your first choice, there'll be about 1 in 10 who say, I don't have a first choice candidate at this point. So that's relatively low. There are 60% of likely caucus goers who have a first choice, but then say they could be persuaded to change their mind. Now, in our last poll, we probed that group and said, well, what's the reason that you think you could be persuaded to vote for somebody else? Is it because there's something you fear will be revealed about your first choice candidate that will be a problem? But 25% said that bothers them. 16% said, oh, I already know something about my candidate that I think that could become a bigger problem, so I'm kind of withholding judgment there. 92% said, I always wait until much later in the process. So they have a first choice candidate for the most part. They're just open. You know, it's Iowa. There's no advantage to locking in all that early. The campaigns haven't organized all that well this time around, so they're not asking people to commit. And if you're not asked, why would you?
And the other part that we hear about a lot is Iowans do not like negative advertising. And boy, we're seeing in this last week in particular a whole lot of negative advertising.
Well, there is such a thing as Iowa Nice, and that, again, is sort of the myth that Iowans won't respond to negative advertising. They might not like it, but clearly there are campaigns that live and die by them.
Ken? We did see 8 years ago when Howard Dean and Richard Gephardt were battling for the lead in Iowa, and they went after each other with such nasty commercials that it was John Kerry and John Edwards who pushed them to 3 and 4 because of the negativity. So in that sense, it backfired.
Let's get another caller in there. This is, excuse me, I'm having trouble with line 7. I apologize, Andy from Slater, Iowa. If you could, if we could move him to another line somehow, we'd like to get him in.
I never liked line 7.
Or Slater, Iowa, of course, is one of the great garden spots of the world. In any case, Ann, you were going to say?
Well, I was going to say I carry around what I call the register graph of doom for Howard Dean, and you see him going, as I mentioned, from being a top contender, falling into fourth place. I mean, and that was at the height of those negative ads that were just the onslaught right then.
And as we come down to the wire, the bus tours, are people going to be resentful of those who did not spend as much time in Iowa, Mitt Romney, as others did, say, Ron Paul or Rick Santorum?
Well, I think the Romney campaign, maybe, we may find out that this has been a very shrewd sort of maintaining plausible deniability. If they don't come in well in Iowa, they never intended to come in well in Iowa. But if they win Iowa, terrific. But I believe that they've had kind of a stealth organization all the time. I understand that his event in Davenport last night, they were packed in and people had to be shuttled into, into adjacent areas. So that now that he's here, that there's that organization may be ginning up the support and bringing crowds to show enthusiasm that may have been there all along.
And when you and your super PAC spend over $1 million in the state, it gets hard to explain that you didn't really care how it came out. Ann Seltzer, thank you very much for your time today. We look forward to your poll on Saturday night with a glimpse of your poll. She's president of Seltzer & Company. We're going to continue talking Iowa with political junkie Ken Rudin. Stay with us when we come back. We want to hear from Iowa Republicans. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This hour, we're concentrating on the Iowa caucuses, which are just 6 days away. Many outside of Iowa lament the power given to this state. Critics say the strong evangelical bloc here does not reflect the rest of the country, nor does the state's emphasis on agriculture. If you're going to the caucuses here on Tuesday, who's your top choice and your second? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us here at Iowa Public Radio. Also joining us here in the studio, Steve Scheffler. He's the president of the Iowa Faith and Freedom Coalition, the Republican National Committeeman for Iowa. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And you've not endorsed anyone.
Nope, and I don't intend to either.
And how come?
Well, first of all, as a veteran of three caucus campaigns, and I think I'm a pretty good salesman, at the end of the day, most individuals, regardless of political philosophy, will make their own choices. And so I think many times an endorsement can actually be a divisive thing, especially when many of the candidates are saying the same thing. And so we just think it's best to keep their feet to the fire, but, trust Iowans to make the right decision on January 3rd.
Keep their feet to the fire on which issues in particular?
Well, any of those issues that it's going to be facing a president, whether it's cultural issues or economic issues. And I know the organization I work for has actually had a series of House parties all across the state featuring one candidate at a time, and we've encouraged people to come to those events where the candidate will speak, but also ask them for some very specific public policy questions. So making sure, there's only a few states. We're one of three or four states that gets that opportunity. After that, leaves Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina. Basically, it's all about media buys, and so we have a tremendous responsibility and a tremendous opportunity here to put their feet to the fire.
All about media buys in Florida, a much bigger state, a much
Correct.
More diverse state. But we're certainly seeing a lot of media buys in
Correct.
This state. $10
Right.
million, dollars, we're told, over the
Right.
past month.
Right.
And how much this used to be retail politics. Obviously, that matters. So do ads during the football games on Sunday.
Well, I think ads probably may play a more important part than they used to, but I still think at the end of the day, people want to have an engaging conversation with a candidate, not one or two times, but three or four times, so they can evaluate these candidates one by one and side by side and then make their decision. So I still think that's a very important part, and we dare not lose that opportunity. Otherwise, it all becomes big, huge media buys all across the country. So it's an opportunity that Iowans need to prize and take advantage of.
Ken?
Steve, Iowans say that you cannot turn on the TV for more than 5 minutes without seeing a negative ad attacking one candidate or the other. Is this more unusual than ever, and what's the reason for that?
Well, I think it is more unusual than in the past, and I guess it's because it's high stakes. You know, it's a wide-open presidential race, and people seem to think that if negative ads work and kind of make sure that another candidate's vote totals on January 3rd are suppressed. And I understand that candidates should and have the right to show differences of opinion in terms of political philosophy, but I guess, like a lot of Iowans, I'm put out with all the negative ads that maybe take somebody's past positions into account and basically distort other facts. So I think, you know, Iowans are kind of sick of that, and I think at the end of the day they're not going to pay attention to those negative ads.
Let's get some Iowa Republicans on the line, 800-989-8255. You can also email us, talk@npr.org. We're going to make another attempt to get Andy on the line from Slater, Iowa. And Andy, are you on the air?
Yep. All right. Very good. Nice to talk to you today.
I'm glad we could get you on the air. Go ahead, please.
All right. Well, I am planning on voting or caucusing probably for Romney. I'd like to do Huntsman, but he just doesn't seem viable that vote would then matter. So I just basically feel like the Republicans in Iowa are pulling us further and further right as a party, and particularly as an evangelical Christian. We're just painted as a bit too hypocritical and a bit too hateful. So I like the Huntsman-Romney wing of the party better than I do some of the more socially conservatives.
Okay, Andy, thanks very much. And is there one position in particular that would lean you towards former Governor Romney?
Not in particular. I'd like it to know if, like Huntsman, he believed a little bit more in science and they were less able to attack the our Supreme Court here in Iowa and get rid of those judges. But I don't know. I may vote Huntsman in any case.
All right, Andy, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. And he's referring, of course, to the when he's talking about the judges, was the decision by the Iowa Supreme Court to say that gay marriage was legal under the Constitution. Those judges, some of those judges ran for extension of their terms and they were defeated. It's interesting. How much do social issues play in this caucus, do you think? And how much do the economy? There's so many people out of work.
Well, I find it kind of amazing that the press always talks about social issues being enunciated here at the expense of economic issues. And I just don't really see that at all. I see a lot of these candidates, whether it's Michelle Bachmann or Perry or Santorum or Newt, talking about economic and social issues. And I'm frankly of the ilk that those issues are interlinked. And if you don't have a candidate that believes that moral and cultural values are important, then quite frankly, I don't think we'll ever get it right economically. So I think those issues are interlinked. And I don't believe for one minute that they've been overplayed. And if you look at the results of caucuses in the past, to say that, you know, the caucus has been hijacked by the evangelical wing of the party, I think that's an overstatement. I mean, George W. Bush won the caucuses here back in 2008. And if you look at Bob Dole won the caucuses here in 1988, and he won them in 1996. And so I think a lot of that is just media hype that has no credibility to it. And quite frankly, anybody with a value system that wants to be involved, I certainly encourage that. And so, again, I believe that that's just something that's been overplayed. But secondly, like I said before, I think those issues are interlinked and they're all important issues.
Ken?
Steve, I first met you in 1988 when you were working for Pat Robertson. And back then, first of all, Robertson brought in a lot of evangelical Christian conservatives who never participated in the process before, or rarely did. And now we kind of expect that. We see a Mike Huckabee win in 2008. We saw a Pat Buchanan, less evangelical, but certainly conservative in 1996. How has the Iowa Republican Party changed since 1988 and Pat Robertson?
Well, actually, I think the influx of those people that came in with the Pat Robertson way back in 1988 have added a lot to the Republican Party. We elected people like Terry Branstad. We elected people like reelected Chuck Grassley in this recent election because of the conservative element in the Republican Party. We took control of the Iowa House. We almost took control of the Iowa Senate. And quite frankly, they've added a lot of vigor. And quite frankly, if you look at who the volunteer base of the Republican Party is today, it's those same people that, you know, some people cast dispersion on. It's a lot of those people that are in the evangelical pro-life movement that are basically the backbone of the party in terms of the volunteer work today.
Let's get another caller in. Jim's on the line from Des Moines.
Yes, I am in Des Moines, and I'm going to support either Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum because the constant reports that Iran is threatening to cut off the Gulf of Hormuz, where I believe we get a sixth of our oil. And those two gentlemen both support ethanol, which is giving us now a significant amount of our oil and could be a whole lot more if we want them to do it. It's very much in the news, and you can't cut off our cornfields with any foreign people. So that's why I'm going to support those gentlemen.
Okay, Jim, thanks very much for the call. He's referring to reports today, I believe, in the news that Iran threatened to, in the event of additional sanctions because of its nuclear ambitions, close the Straits of Hormuz. I think the Fifth Fleet said they might have a vote in that, too. But in any case, the ethanol issue has been a critical one here for many candidates for many years. Is it this time around?
I think it is, but I think there was a recent poll out maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago that said that ethanol subsidies was a deal breaker with only about 20-22% of Iowans. And I think, as Senator Grassley and others pointed out, if we have an equal playing field in terms of the energy question, that eventually maybe we won't have to have subsidies anywhere across the board. So, for Iowa's economy, it certainly is important. But again, I don't think ethanol subsidies per se is a deal breaker with most caucus goers this year.
Ken,
we were just a second ago. We were talking about evangelical conservatives and the influence they have, and yet many polls seem to indicate, word on the street seem to indicate that Ron Paul is also doing very well. Who's not really an evangelical conservative? What is that all about? Where does the Ron Paul support come from?
Well, I think a lot of Ron Paul's support goes back to the fact that he's the one that's been consistent on the longest-term basis in terms of calling our nation to account for its humongous debt and overspending. And a lot of people are attracted by that, and I think rightfully so. Knowing that he's the one candidate, I think, that's talking about actually getting rid of 5 federal departments. So there's a certain appeal to that. And so there's an attraction there, and, he's going to bring out some new caucus goers, which I think bringing new people into the party system is always a good thing. So he does have his support there, but he's also got his detractors because of some other issues. So
I think Rick Perry only had 3 that he wanted to cut. I can't think of the third one, though.
Well, what the third one was, no. We've also seen different polls on the issue of Mormon religion, and this, of course, refers to Mitt Romney and John Huntsman, both of whom are Mormons, and different polls showing that Republicans in this state might not vote for somebody because of their religion. How do you think that's going to break out?
You're talking about in terms of the caucuses or the general election?
Caucuses.
No, I don't think at the end of the day that people are concerned about that particular issue. What they are concerned about, I think, like myself, is why Mitt Romney, like John Huntsman, has not been to this state more often. And quite frankly, I think that candidates that have been here on an even long-term basis asking for the votes of Iowans is important. And so I think his lack of absence here, or his absence here, has been one thing. And I think also some people are concerned about where is he at on certain issues. Prior to 2007, he talked, in the affirmative for homosexual marriage, gay rights. It was pro-choice. Probably could be considered to the left of even Ted Kennedy, who he ran against the Senate back in whatever year that was. And then when he came to Iowa, he talked on the right side, but now he doesn't talk about it at all. So I think there's a concern about where does he really stand on these issues at all, period.
We're talking with Steve Scheffler, the president of the Iowa Faith and Freedom Coalition, and the Political Junkie is with us, as he is every Wednesday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller in. This is John. John's calling us from North Central Iowa.
Yeah, thanks. I've heard people talking about undecided Iowans, and it is true that We kind of hold out to the last minute, and I've done that before. But, this time I am genuinely confused. I have been something of an ideologue. I was a Huckabee supporter. This crop, I really like them all. I mean, I don't hate anybody. I don't even hate Romney. Santorum and Michelle, she's awesome, are my ideologues. But,
And I think we're losing John's cell phone.
I think he might. He might get her done. He might, for the economy, I think we could stand him for 4 years. Although he's not my perfect ideologue, we could stand him for 4 years. He could prescribe X-lax, get our economy going, and give birth to, a liberated financial system that's not all bogged down.
And John, excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Your cell phone dropped out there for a second. Which candidate are you talking about you think might get her done?
Well, I don't know. I'm not really sure. I think if we put up with Paul for 4 years, although not my ideologue, he could prescribe some ex-lax and give birth to a liberated economy back to the, what the Constitution said. So, but I still don't know. I really, I'm not just pulling your leg. Normally I do know. Like I said, I pulled hard for Huckabee. I met him. I spent a lot of time with him, just meeting him on the road. But this time I really don't know. I think we have a good crop of possible choices.
Well, let me ask you, Steve Scheffler. Yesterday, we heard Newt Gingrich, I'm falling into somebody's trap there. Newt Gingrich say, first of all, that Ron Paul cannot get the nomination, and that he could not support him against, maybe even not against Barack Obama. There are people who say Ron Paul's positions on national defense and foreign policy are outside the mainstream. Is that going to make a problem for him here in Iowa?
I think at the end of the day, most people are going to be willing to enthusiastically support whoever nominee is, any of the six or seven people that are running for president. The bottom line is I think that most of us wouldn't have ever dreamed that we could have a president as far left as Barack Obama, who indeed is following a socialist agenda. So I think at the end of the day, any of these candidates will be 150% better than what sits in the White House today. So I think at the end of the day that they'll support the nominee.
Ken?
Steve, just a few minutes ago, you were talking about the flip-flops or the switch in positions for Mitt Romney. But as we've seen the last couple of days, Newt Gingrich has a history also of renouncing previous positions. Do you think that's going to hurt Newt Gingrich as it seems to be hurting?
I don't think nearly so much as Mitt Romney, because at least he's tried to talk about, you know, where he's at today and try to convince voters that this is where he's at, whereas Mitt Romney basically, as I mentioned before, is not even talking about these issues, where he went from left to right, and now he's basically silent on those issues. So, you know, Newt, to his credit, is talking about why he's made these changes here and there, and I think when people hear it enough times that they believe that person's going to be consistent, do what they say they're going to do.
Let's get one more caller in. Let's go to Seth, and Seth's with us from Northwest Iowa.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, Neil. It is an honor to share the airspace with you at the moment.
That's kind of you to say.
Thank you. I would just like to state that I believe that when the caucus is all said and done, Ron Paul's going to pull through because he speaks to the pragmatic side of most Iowans. And whether you say they're Christian conservative or liberal, I think at the end of the day that doesn't matter, no offense to your panel, because we're fair people. I mean, the Supreme Court passed gay marriage for a reason. And I think that if you look at the facts back, the reason that those judges got knocked off the docket is because there was far too much money poured into it. And yes, the small chunk of the true Christian conservatives went to the polls. But I think if you went across the board with every Republican in Iowa, they would say that they want a fair life for everybody, and Ron Paul stands for that.
All right. Seth, thank you very much for the call. Given the split among the numbers of candidates, do you expect anybody to get over 25% come next Tuesday?
I think at this point it's probably highly unlikely, and again, I think a lot of it is based on two reasons. One is the candidates have not been here near as often, except for maybe like Rick Santorum, have not been here near as often as they have in past caucus cycles, and people want to evaluate their candidate after five or six encounters with those candidates. And secondly, is because a lot of those candidates are very similar on a whole wide range of issues.
Well, we'll see what the results are next Tuesday. Thanks so much for your time, Steve Scheffler.
Thanks.
Steve Scheffler, president of the Iowa Faith and Freedom Coalition. He joined us here at the studios of Iowa Public Radio. Next Tuesday, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, will going to be back on the road again in New Hampshire. Tomorrow, Labor Secretary Hilda Solis will join Jennifer Ludden, who will be filling in, to talk about the proposal to extend federal wage protections to home health care workers. Join her for that. It's the Talk of the Nation from Des Moines.